Hi, I'm Jamie, and thank you for checking out Bad Dreams. Before we get started, I want to note, these are all listener-submitted stories. If you have a scary story of any kind, fact or fiction, please send it to baddreamspodcast@gmail.com, address in the description. Bad Dreams is a horror podcast featuring strong language, violence, and situations not suitable for all ears. Viewer discretion is advised. The Lonely Street by Weird Turkish Kid. For background, when I was a kid, I lived in a small, old town. Everything seemed run down, but the people loved it there. There was this one street in the neighborhood with one empty house that no one went on, not even cars. I asked my mom why no one went on the street, and she told me that years ago, a bunch of people went missing until one night. All of the missing people were found, but they were hanging from the trees on the street. They were murdered and kept in the house until that night. No one goes there out of respect and fear, as the killer was never found. Here's my story. My friends and I were playing a bit of football in the street. Anthony yelled "Hike," and I ran a Hail Mary. He saw me open and threw it, a little too hard. I tried to grab it after it bounced, but it slipped out of my hands and the ball bounced onto the yard of the house where my mom told me the murders happened. We looked at each other, each with expressions that said "Hell no," as I just told them the story. After arguing about who would get it, we decided on Anthony, the kid who threw the ball. He hesitated for a long time, but eventually went in. He walked in cautiously towards the ball and bent down to grab it. When he stood up straight, he said, "Guys, why the hell is there a light on in the house?" We walked towards Anthony to see what he was talking about. All of us saw the light on, then turn off. We got off the street quickly and continued to play. Not even 5 minutes later, we heard four consecutive loud thuds coming from inside the house. It was so loud that everyone jumped. My friend CJ had the bright idea to go check it out. All of us looked at him like he was fucking crazy, but we exchanged some looks and decided to go. We were 14 at the time, which means we were pretty fucking stupid. Tyler and I stayed back as Aiden taunted us, asking if we were scared and calling us pussies. But Tyler just responded with, "I'm not fucking going in there." When they took a step on the porch, I picked up the football and threw it to Tyler. We played catch, hoping they would be fine. After a minute or so, I heard a slight knock on the window. I looked up to where I heard it coming from, and there was a man's dirty face. The face had a blank stare, looking right at me. I froze in horror as I heard our friends laughing loudly. The man turned and slowly walked away from the window. Me and Tyler screamed at the guys to come back outside, but they didn't hear us. Tyler and I just kept yelling and yelling, but nothing. Finally, I heard the guys scream from inside the house and soon saw them running out. They ran towards us and screamed at us to run. At first, Tyler and I thought they were playing a joke on us, but then a very large man came out of the house carrying something. Before I could make out what was in his hands, someone yanked my wrist to get away. As we ran, I heard him grunting with anger while slamming whatever was in his hands on the porch. We ran until we reached my house. Tyler and I asked them what happened, and Anthony said, "There was someone with a bloodied or rusty axe." That's when he screamed "Holy shit" and bolted. The guy also yelled something, but he could only make out "Fucking kill you." Aiden took out his phone and dialed 911. He told them everything. The cops eventually arrived and searched the house. Luckily, they found the guy. As they led him to the cop car, he just stared at us with a huge fucking smile on his face. Police were easily able to connect him to the massacre and put him away for good. I'm just glad everyone made it out alive. My Terrifying Encounter While Exploring an Abandoned Insane Asylum by Legend 061. Everything started with me and a couple of my buddies hanging out. For the sake of the story, I'll name my two friends, Michael and Lucas. Basically, everyone got pretty much wasted from drinking too much cheap bourbon Michael had brought with him. It was around 2 a.m. when Lucas, still a bit drunk, suggested we should go explore the insane asylum. For the context, we all live in a small town together. There isn't much going on here, but when you drive out about 15 miles on an empty back road, you should come across an old abandoned psych ward which has been overgrown since it was closed in the 1960s for reasons unknown to us. Since there was really nothing better to do, we all agreed to the 30-minute drive. We grabbed our backpacks, some water, three flashlights, and a big hunting knife. Lucas also brought a couple of spray paint cans for obvious reasons. He was into that stuff at the time. The drive was relatively uneventful, with the exception that Michael almost ran over a snake lying in the middle of the road. When we arrived, the sight of this huge, run-down asylum just standing there made me feel uneasy. But my doubts quickly evaporated as Michael and Lucas were already going around the place looking for an entrance. Around back, we found a window that was not completely boarded up, and we crawled headfirst through the small opening. I quickly got to my feet and let my eyes adjust to the darkness that completely surrounded us. We powered up our flashlights and began wandering around the corridors with rooms on either side. The walls were pretty much all covered with graffiti, so Lucas suggested we should look for the basement entrance with the intention of finding a free spot for his graffiti. After a 30-minute search, we finally found the basement entrance. The stairs were rusty and creaked with every step. It smelled terrible. As we wandered off into the dark hallway, which our cheap flashlights only poorly lit up, the terrible smell grew even worse. I can only describe it as a mixture of vomit and rotten eggs. What struck me as odd was that all of the walls were pretty much clean, unlike the walls on the first floor. It almost seemed like nobody has ever made it all the way to the basement level. Lucas started spray painting one of the nearby walls, while Michael and I just watched. By the time he was finished, the smell of aerosol filled the air, almost drowning out the horrible stink completely. As we continued down the hallway, we could tell that the smell came from a room further down. At this point, we were pretty much freaking out. I had the hunting knife tight in my hands as I approached the room and shined my flashlight inside. The light beam hit, there was a circle of burned out candles, and in the center of the circle was a dark object hanging from the ceiling. At this point, I vomited because the smell was so strong. Michael was the bravest one of us. He stumbled into the room and grabbed a metal bar from a pile of junk next to him. As he poked the object, we noticed brown spatter stains all over the walls and under the object. Michael lifted the cloth covering the object, revealing the beaten face of a man who looked like he must have been there for a while. He was hanging by his feet. We sobered up quickly. Seconds after realizing this was a body hanging there, we heard footsteps sprinting towards us from down the hall. Without saying anything, we ran out of there as fast as we could. The footsteps gave chase. The people who were chasing us were also throwing rocks and other objects to try and slow us down. We jumped through the windows, sprinted out and around front, got into my car, and hightailed it out of there. It was then that Lucas realized he left his backpack containing his cell phone, wallet, and ID in the basement. Rightfully so, Lucas was terrified with the idea that these people knew where he lived. And that fear proved to be true. Over the next few months, Lucas would claim to feel like he was being followed and would see the same cars and people around. Remember, we lived in a small town where everyone knew each other. These people he did not ever see before. It got worse and worse until I received a call from Lucas's mother, who was hysterical. Between inaudible crying, I got that she hasn't seen Lucas since yesterday morning, and she was wondering if I knew where he was. I did. That's when Michael and I went to the police and told them everything. Sure enough, they searched the asylum and found Lucas, alive, along with the bodies of six missing people. Lucas was found hanging by his feet, just like the body we discovered. He was badly cut and slowly bleeding out. The old burnt out candles were replaced and lit. As far as I know, the police arrested only two people who were found walking through the woods towards the asylum. What they told the police still gives me the chills. There is a cult out there kidnapping and sacrificing people. Their sole cause is to cleanse the human race of our sickness, as they claimed. We continued to live in that town until we moved away for college. I still see Michael and Lucas when we all come home, but I can tell you, Lucas has never been the same.
Holding, Knocking, Screaming, by DeSaint, 2020. Narrated by Adam Blanford. I'd sleep in bed with my wife. I'd hold her close, feel her body, whispered in her ear, "I love you." I've never been happier than in those moments alone with her. However, I'd still hear the screams in the back of my head. They pleaded, "Help me! Please, let me go! I won't tell anyone!" I didn't know the voice, but every day it grew louder and louder. I'd sometimes try to communicate with it, but it would just continue screaming and pleading. I'd get up early every morning, work day or not, to be with my son. I was the breakfast man. I'd flip flapjacks high up in the air, playing classic rock on the radio, though the music was way too loud in the morning. They never minded. I would turn it down, of course, if they asked, but no one ever did. In addition to the screaming, most early mornings I'd hear knocking. Sometimes it grew so loud, I'd feel the kitchen shake, but no one else felt it. The knocking and screaming only stopped when I would step out of the house. Most evenings, I would take care of dinner. After we ate at the table, we'd let our son pick a movie for us to all watch. Nothing violent or scary. I never really watched the movies. I just have my wife in my lap, holding her hands, watching my son fall asleep before we'd take him to bed. I would get the sensation someone else was sitting next to me, though. I'd have one hand in my wife's hand, but the other one felt like it was being pulled away. One weekend, my wife and son were going to visit my mother-in-law. She wasn't very fond of me. So my wife and son would leave for the weekend to visit with her, and I'd stay home alone. Hearing the knocking and shaking begin, I stood up and asked, "Who are you? What do you want from me?" The voice returned, screaming, "Help me! Please, just let us go! Oh God, please!" The house began to shake, and I felt a force around my body, holding me still. The spare bedroom door swung open, and I was unwillingly forced into the room. The door slammed shut, and I was in complete darkness. I felt the presence of someone else in the room, and heard quiet sobs and sniffles. There was a cold draft in the room. As my eyes adjusted to the darkness, I could make out what seemed to be two figures crouched together on the floor. I grabbed my cell phone and flipped on the flashlight. As the light illuminated the room, I saw what appeared to be two monstrous creatures snarling at me. Before I could run to the door, they both leaped on me, knocking me to the floor, digging their claws into my throat and sternum. I could feel one of the creature's hands grasp my head a pull. I awoke in a bed. It didn't seem like my bed, but it was in my room. The creature was asleep next to me. I tried to sneak out of the bed, but my arms and legs were chained down. Luckily, I was able to squeeze my hand out, but not without making some noise which woke up the creature. Realizing I was about to escape, the creature let out a growl. Thinking quickly, I grabbed the hunting knife I kept in my nightstand and stabbed the creature in the throat. It let out another cry, but this time in agony as it grasped its neck, falling off the bed. The house began to shake. Knowing there was a second creature, I wasted no time. I pulled the knife out of the creature's neck and made my way to my son's room, where I could hear the other creature growling. I busted in and jumped on the creature, stabbing it repeatedly until it stopped moving. I sat there for some time, consumed by the silence. No shaking, no knocking, and no screaming. Nothing. The seconds turned into hours as I just sat there, staring at the floor, covered in blood, in my son's room. I was in this trance until I heard a knock on the door. It was my mother-in-law. She was by herself, afraid she was another creature and did something with my wife and son. I opened the door, grabbed her by the wrist, and yanked her in the house. As I slammed and locked the door, she ran to the back bedroom, my room. She let out a loud scream. She must have seen the creature dead on the floor. I ran to the room. She was holding the body of my wife, whose arms and legs were chained to the bed, and had a stab wound right where I stabbed the creature. I ran to my son's room. The creature's body was gone, but I replaced it with my son, who was also chained to the bed and stabbed multiple times. Coming to the realization that the creatures escaped and killed my family, I heard a familiar growl coming from my bedroom. A third creature.
The Man, written by Penguin the Poet, narrated by Charlotte Norup. Be sure to follow Penguin the Poet on Snapchat and Instagram at Penguin the Poet. The narrator in the story is a teenager, so as to make the story more appropriate. I did my research and it might have been sleep paralysis, so enjoy. I could feel him in the room. His eyes were on me, but I refused to open my eyes. My skin tingled, my breath hitched, and I couldn't take it anymore. I opened one eye, and then the other. I looked at the foot of my bed where he waited for me every night, and he wasn't there. I let out a sigh of relief and looked up at the ceiling above me, adorned in glow-in-the-dark stars, and then I heard it. It was a subtle thud on the base of my bed. I looked down once more, and there he was, tall and intimidating. He didn't have a face, but even without one, I knew he was smiling, because my fear entertained him. He shook his head, telling me to keep quiet, and then he walked to the side of my bed. I watched as he tilted his head to the side menacingly. His strong hands were quick to grip my neck, as he did every other night. I quivered as he drew a line from my bust to just above my waistline, with a single finger on his other hand. Where he stopped, it felt like he was churning and stirring my guts. I tried to keep quiet. I tried not to make him mad, but after months of torture, I could not handle it anymore, and I screamed. His grip on my neck was no longer teasing, but violent. For the first time in months, he let out a sound, a low, raspy growl. He inched his face closer to mine. I cried and begged him to let me go, and he did. I sat up confused, worried that maybe hearing me cry had triggered something in him. Yes, I feared him, but somewhere along the way, I began to appreciate him. Life was not easy or stable for me, and he gave me an eerie sense of stability. "Are you okay?" I asked. He stroked my cheek before lifting his hand above his head and slapping me. He didn't just slap me, he scratched me. His hand found my neck once more, and he choked me until I passed out. The next morning, I woke up to an empty house and a note on the fridge written in black ooze. It read, "I watched you. I marked you. I am you." I dropped the note and stumbled back, bumping into the kitchen table. A small hand mirror fell and shattered at my feet. And as I bent down to pick it up, I caught a glimpse of my reflection. Or should I say, his reflection.
Be sure to follow Bad Dreams on social media and rate, review, and subscribe to Bad Dreams wherever you get your podcasts. Thanks for listening.